This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dan Pizzuto, writer for the 33rd team, fresh off his sister's wedding in Australia. Dan, first of all, we must know, how was Australia?
It was good. It was nice. It's very nice. It is probably the least convenient time zone to be trying to watch American sports at the same time. So that was a little bit of a struggle. But outside of that, it was a lot of fun. Had a great time.
How did you attack that? Did you try to watch them live, or did you just give in to the time zone and be like, I'm going to enjoy Australia. I'm going to tape what I need to tape or know that it's available to me on demand, and I'll get up tomorrow and watch this stuff.
It was a little bit of both. So I think the early afternoon games were starting, I think, at like 3 a.m. So I was making zero attempt to watch those live. So I went back to it. Primetime games are about 3 p.m. So I got there on a Thursday, was able to watch, some Thursday night games live in the afternoon, which was very nice. A little bit of both, but did not go out of my way to catch these games live. So it was a lot of, spending time. We were getting, other people in the family were getting ready for dinner and things, was going back and watching, some recaps, watching some All-22 and trying to figure it out that way.
Yeah. Also your sister, I'm sure you're like, we're getting married in the middle of football season. Like, why'd you have to, the rest of the year is available, but I'm glad everything went well. Glad to have you back on the show. I hope the wedding was great, and let's talk some football. The Commanders, speaking of Thursday Night Football, last time we saw our heroes, they were facing the Philadelphia Eagles, who are playing incredible football right now. And I think a lot of fans here in D.C. have been kind of wondering, is Jaden hurt? Is this a Cliff Kingsbury regression? And my retort to that has kind of been, that looked like an offense playing the current version of the Eagles defense. Where do you fall on that scale of that was something that the Commanders were doing or not doing or flawed in some way versus this is an Eagles defense that is playing as some of the best football of any defense in the league right now?
Yeah, I think I sort of lean toward that ladder. And I think you can kind of even go back to the Steelers game, too. I think just in the way the Commanders have been these past 2 weeks, with whether, Jaden is playing at 100% or not, these are probably the two best defenses they've played in kind of back-to-back games in a situation where this offense wasn't completely at full strength. So I kind of look at what they've done the past 2 weeks as kind of falling into that territory. When you go to the Eagles game, this was, just a team that was just set up really well to be kind of countering what Washington wanted to do. They were kind of, it was, the Fangio system where this front four was getting a lot of penetration. They were sitting in light boxes where these linebackers were just able to rally to the ball and not allow really anything to break through the second level. You had the secondary. They were playing a whole bunch of, too high, which wasn't going to allow the Commanders to throw deep down the field. So when you just kind of had all of that playing together and you just have this Philadelphia defense that really just in execution wise is really pulling off a lot of the things that they need to. It was probably just, this defense playing as good as they could against an offense that probably just wasn't really going at 100%.
So the other thing that I would ask, Dan, for someone with your perspective who watches all 22 around the league, is how unique is what Philly does? Because we know Fangio is kind of the godfather of this zone match, quarters match system. And obviously, if the guy who invented the thing is teaching you how to do it, probably a good chance that you do it better than anyone else. And for Washington to get that on a short week with a rookie quarterback seems like a particularly bad draw. But is that something that Jaden would have seen in other places, or is what Philly's doing still fairly unique to Fangio?
So it's a little unique to what Fangio is doing right now, because even his system has changed a little bit with what he's been doing in Philly. Because, back when we even started, the Fangio kind of defensive revolution that was going around the league, you know, it was a lot of two high shells, but then it would kind of rotate and go into like a single high coverage. Fangio would still play a whole bunch of, you know, cover three, which would still be just, you know, one deep safety once the snap was given. So now he is playing a lot of, you know, two high coverages. So it's some, a little bit of cover two. It's a lot of quarters. It's a lot of cover six, which are just kind of matching with a bunch of different coverages that, you know, Jaden hasn't been seeing quite as often. And then you just have players that are playing at an extremely high level. You have that front four right now. I think Jalen Carter's probably been one of the best defensive players in the league in the way he can just kind of take over an entire line from that interior spot. I think you have those two linebackers that are playing really well that allows them to play in light boxes where they can just kind of play downhill so quickly. I think both Bond and N'Kobe Dean are just playing really well. So you have this system that is working well, that has some tweaks in it, and then you also have these players that are just also playing at a high level.
Yeah, the team speed definitely showed up. Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. What is it about the Pittsburgh and Philadelphia approaches that not just limited Jaden Daniels as a runner, but specifically as a scrambler? Like, it's one thing to shut down some of the design run games. Pittsburgh kind of just said, we're going to run at you on zone read stuff and make you hand the football off. That becomes pretty, you know, self-explanatory as to why then he's not keeping it. Against Philly, they had a couple of looks, and Philly did some similar stuff, but also just did a good job on like quarterback draws and things. But the scrambling is something that he's been able to do against everybody else, where he's able to just create out of structure. What did Philly and Pittsburgh do, in your opinion, that was so effective in limiting him to his literal worst two rushing games of the season?
Yeah, I think with Pittsburgh, they definitely put in an effort to get those, either whether it was the edge rushers just kind of containing that edge, or having the linebackers kind of sit and be ready for it. Like, that was a big, heavy part of the Pittsburgh game plan, where they were just not going to allow Jaden to run at all. And they were playing a ton of man coverage behind it. So they really had to put that effort into keeping him in the pocket, because usually when you have, you know, a mobile quarterback and playing against man coverage, that can be very dangerous, because so many players are so many defenders have their back to the quarterback. That's when you see a lot of these big runs. So because they were playing so much man, that had some tight windows that Jaden kind of had to throw into. But because they were playing so much man, they really put an effort in some of those edge rushers and the second level defenders to kind of crowd around the line, be kind of that spy, not allow him to get out of the pocket. And Philly, it was, you know, partly those linebackers were there too, but it was a lot of, you know, the pressure also. And it was just a lot of this, you know, the too high too, just had Jaden kind of checking down a lot. He had, I think, his lowest average depth of target of the season. He was not trying to, you know, push the ball down the field. Actually, just wrote about the Commanders today. And, you know, when you look at even plays that were over 2.5 seconds from weeks 1 through 9, you know, Jaden was scrambling nearly 24% of the time on plays that lasted 2.5 seconds or more. It was only 10% over the past 2 weeks. So I think that could potentially be, you know, something where he might still be recovering from that rib injury a little bit. Not that it is really like taking him away from some of the throws, but it might just be him, you know, playing a little safer in the pocket and not trying to extend quite as much, because the way he was even looking to extend when he had those opportunities was so much different. So I think it plays a little bit of both, where these were two defenses that were definitely trying to not allow him to do that. And I think Jaden himself a little bit was not as, you know, quick to try to get to his legs in order to make some of those extended plays as he has been earlier in the season.
Again, Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team, if you want to check out his work, including the article he wrote today about the Commanders and their offense. On the defensive side of the football, Dan, this defense is really hard for me to evaluate right now, so I'm curious how you try to make sense of it. And obviously, like, the process is the same. You watch all the snaps, and you're like, all right, that was good, that was bad, that was good, that was bad. And the consistency with which they've been good for about 50 to 55 minutes over the last month and a half is pretty high. It's basically every game. And then at the end, there's been a variety of different things that have gone wrong, from big runs to big pass plays to sustained drives. Think of the Chicago game late. how do you try to make sense of this defense? And like the kind of quintessential sports talk radio question, are they a good defense? Because there's long stretches where they are, and then the numbers by the end of 60 minutes, which is how long they play, would maybe suggest otherwise. How do you make sense of what the Commanders are on that side of the ball right now?
Yeah, I lean toward they are more good than bad, which is for Washington, that's a great thing to have. You know, it would be a little better if the, you know, you would be able to have some of the ups and downs on defense, which I think is normal for a defense. That wouldn't feel, you know, quite as drastic if the offense had played, you know, a little better over the past two games, and you didn't have to kind of rely on, you know, having a great defense for a full game, which is very hard for a lot of teams to do. But when you look at, you know, the past since, you know, week seven, Washington right now is fourth in EPA per dropback, which is they're playing like some really good, you know, pass defense. They're struggling against the run, which puts them just 12th in EPA per play kind of overall. So there are, you know, some of those little, you know, hiccups that have taken them. But the way I think their pass defense has evolved over the past couple of weeks is definitely something that you can be optimistic for. And I think that'll continue, you know, if Marshawn Lattimore ever gets healthy. Also, you know, you add a cornerback like that on the field, and I think there is definitely going to be more reason to be optimistic for how this defense has, you know, really progressed over the season, then, and that allows you to kind of overlook some of the bad parts that have kind of allowed them to, you know, be some big plays on that side of the field. And then you kind of expect the offense could potentially, you know, score a couple more points and kind of rebound a little bit, so where you won't have to be relying on that defense in these close games quite as often too.
If we go a little more granular on the run defense, I think it becomes pretty interesting, because the numbers obviously capture the entire picture because that's what the numbers are. But snap in, snap out, I feel like they're pretty good. And then obviously the Saquon runs at the end of the Philly game just absolutely are going to change the numbers. You know, but even against Pittsburgh, like it took 43 carries for them to get their 140 yards. Like snap in, snap out, that's pretty good. And I'm curious, when you evaluate the process for Washington against the run, like, do you like what they're trying to do and they just need to be able to do it for a full 60 minutes? Or if you're an opposing offensive coordinator, are you like, we know we can get yards on the ground if we need to, in which case they are definitively, to put a kind of qualitative tag on it, a bad run defense?
Yeah, it's probably, again, it's not a fun sports radio answer, but it's probably, you know, a little bit of both. Like they are still doing, you know, some good things. At some point, they're not giving up, you know, a huge rate of explosive plays that are below the league average there when you kind of do look granularly. The one thing is right now they are, you know, 29th in yards before contact per rush, you know, since week seven, which is kind of around where this turnaround started a little bit. So there are still some areas where they are kind of allowing a little bit of penetration at that first level, but they are, when they're playing well, that run fit is kind of happening from the second level. They are able to get there. That just hasn't been quite as consistent. But again, it's kind of one of those things, like, given how I think really the focus was getting that pass defense much better in the earlier part of the season because of how many explosive plays they were giving up on that side of the ball. I think that was definitely a priority to getting the execution there first. Now that they have that fixed a little bit, I could probably see them, you know, trying to try a couple more things in the run defense now that they don't have to worry about, you know, giving up a 20-yard play every time someone drops back like we might have been worried about earlier in the season. So I think the run defense can kind of, you know, live with some of that shakiness a little bit. But when they are playing well, I think there is still some high level play there. And especially when you think about, you know, how they've kind of given up some talent on that interior part of the line, I think there are some guys stepping up. So I don't think it's going to be quite as big of a concern going forward.
Yeah, that yards before contact stat is so confirming, I guess, based off the film, because there's so many times where I'm watching it and I go, that felt like a pretty good play. And then the film goes to the next snap and it was a first and 10. It's like, oh, it's second and six? I feel like they made the tackle, right? Like, Luvu was right there at the line of scrimmage. Wagner was right there. It's like, oh, the line of scrimmage got moved 4 yards. That's not good. That's not good at all. And so that I think is a really illustrative way of kind of how a lot of this info comes together, how this data, how the film, you know, all jives together in terms of, okay, yeah, there's some stuff that they're doing well. Guys are fitting stuff okay. But if the whole first level of the defense just gets moved, then the good tackling and the good run fits are happening at a place where you're still giving up more than you'd want to.
Right. So right now they're about league average. They're 16th since that week 7 cutoff that I had in yards after contact per attempt. So they're fitting kind of well. But what also goes into it, they're not kind of combining that with negative plays in the run game. So since that time, only 14.7% of runs against them have gone for 0 or negative yards. And that's 31st in the league. Only Carolina has been worse. So they're not getting some of those big plays on the other end in the run game. So you're just kind of, even if they're not big runs that are happening right now, they're just slowly gaining like just enough yards. And you're not really getting those plays that put a team either behind the sticks or losing yards. And that has kind of been, you know, where they've been suffering from down to down, even if the, like you said, the execution of some of these linebacker plays, making the tackle fairly early has been good. They're not getting the big plays that really, you know, stuff a run game, you know, like you kind of would hope from some of these better run defenses across the league.
For sure. And that's something they actually were doing earlier in the season. Now they got to put it all together. Like, they can go first third of the season, stuffs, bad otherwise. Second half of the season, better, but no stuffs. Third of the season, put it all together. Hey, maybe they'll have a good run defense in the final 6 weeks here. That'd be cool. Dan Pizzuto is with us. He's great. Here, 33rd team, of course, is where you can check out his work. He's with us on the Hoffman Show. Just real quickly, Dan, on the way out here, this matchup this weekend against the Cowboys, they're obviously struggling mightily on both sides of the ball right now. If you got to wave your magic wand and fix something for the Cowboys that would make them a better football team, what's the number one thing that you would want to use your magic wand that I've now granted you on?
Yeah, that's tough because, like you said, kind of everything has gone wrong. I mean, you would kind of like them to, just from a watchability standpoint, to have a little better play at quarterback right now. But again, even when Dak Prescott was playing well, it's, you know, that offense just not very well structured and relying on kind of CeeDee Lamb to do a lot of things. I think what you would kind of really like to see from a Mike Zimmer defense is a run defense that stops anything. And I think, you know, why I'm not quite as concerned about this Washington offense over the next couple of games, because they do have some fairly easy opponents, is if this run game cannot get going against this Cowboys rush defense, then that's where you can be a little bit concerned about maybe getting a little bit of a, you know, Cliff Kingsbury not adjusting, because this team cannot stop the run, and that really takes away from a lot of the other things that Mike Zimmer could want to do in the pass defense. So if I could do something to start to fix Dallas, it would be figuring out how to stop the run, because everything goes off that, and right now they've been the worst run defense in the league, and it's just, you know, you can do kind of whatever you want when you're going on against them on the ground.
Dan, I'm so sorry. That was actually the incorrect answer. What we were looking for is curtains. We were looking for curtains in AT&T Stadium. That's actually, the wand was to put up the curtains. It wasn't to fix the football team. So I'm going to have to revoke your magic wand.
All right. So, well, this is going to be, what, a 1 p.m. game, right? So the curtains.
Yeah, and it's here. It's in Northwest Stadium. Right? So that wouldn't help them anyway, because it's in Washington. But still, the correct answer is clearly the curtains. If Jerry Jones would just be less stubborn about his curtains, everything else would fall into place.
I mean, I would probably, if I really had a magic wand for that franchise, it would probably be an owner that was probably not, you know, 80 years old and had a little bit of, you know, kind of forward thinking of how this roster could have been constructed last offseason before we got to this place. That is probably really the magic wand that the Cowboys should have used. But I think Jerry Jones kind of has the magic going over that, where even the magic wand waving for that probably wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, that's actually the correct answer, but I didn't know how intense we wanted to, how sports radio we wanted to go there. Dan, always great stuff, man. Great to have you back. Enjoy the weekend of football, and we'll be checking out your stuff at 33rd Team.
All right, appreciate it.
That is Dan Pezzuta, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. Again, he wrote about the Commanders today, so if you want more great in-depth analysis of what he's seeing with Washington, some of the numbers, some of the trends, all that kind of stuff, check out his work at the33rdteam.com. When we get back here on The Hoffman Show, we go to a different website. We go from a very, very smart website where there's lots of great football information to the YouTube comments. That is right. It is Thursday. It'll be 5:30. Never Read the Comments is next. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are not streaming live on YouTube today. However, we will put up some of the highlights of the show on YouTube. Just internet stuff as I'm on remote for today and tomorrow. But be back in all of our usual places on Monday. We'll sort of never read the comments in a second. But Anthony, I have just an announcement, a proclamation that I'd like to make real quick. Just so everyone listening is on the same page.
Okay.
I'm hungry.
Oh, wow.
You know why I'm hungry?
You're hangry.
I'm not hangry. I'm in a fine mood.
Okay.
And I'm sure I could go downstairs here at my mother-in-law's house and get some snacks. I'm sure if she hears the sound of my voice, there will be snacks that somehow magically appear because she's an excellent, wonderful baker, and she's made all kinds of treats for us as we've been here this week, and this is not a cry for help. It's a comedic mini story, because when you are on child time, AKA you've been, in charge of a 3-year-old a week, we're getting really close to dinner time here at 5:30.
Ah, okay, okay, okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking what you're putting down.
Typically,
man.
Yeah, I was very used to my schedule is like I eat close to 8 o'clock because of course I eat close to 8 o'clock. I do a radio show until 7 and I have to go home and make dinner because my wife often is working late and all that kind of stuff as well. So, if we eat by 7:30 ever during a week, I'm pretty psyched. But this week my body's like, oh, it's 5:30. Shouldn't you be making dinner right now? Isn't dinner supposed to be done by at least 6 o'clock? And it's not. Today I'm working like usual. And so I will go have, I'm sure they're going to eat without me because they should, because the 3-year-old runs the world, not me. But at 7 o'clock, I will go eat dinner.
I mean, as long as you know the 3-year-old runs the world, then I think you'll be good, you know?
Yeah. There's probably some funny Uncle Craig stories we can weave into the show later, perhaps. I'll have to think of the best one of the week and try to, we'll do that at the end of the show today.
Okay.
But just, yeah, being at the mercy of children, man, it's, how often have you like had to solo uncle?
Or solo?
Small group uncle, either way.
Solo. Where,
like, you're in charge.
Rarely. I mean, maybe like an hour or two, but like not days at a time, no.
Yeah. And like, we're still in, like, you know, the 3-year-old's parents, my sister-in-law and her husband, like, they're still around. Like, we're still in the, hey, if something goes wrong, we just hand the screaming child back to the parents and they have to take care of it situation, which is very aunt, uncle, not like faux parenting. But we do have a much more direct understanding of the schedule. I'll put it that way. The schedule is being dictated by the children's needs.
Yeah, for
not
sure.
By ours. Yeah. But today I'm back to being an adult. I'm here at work and, it's Thursday and it's 5:30. And that means it's not time for dinner. It's time for this.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby.
Never read the comments.
All right, so this is how this goes. The show is chopped up into all the segments that we do and put on YouTube at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. We then take all of your comments that you leave on said show, this show, and we read them. We pick out some of the ones that are most interesting, sometimes funny, sometimes thoughtful, sometimes terrible and in need of bashing. And then we talk about them on Thursdays at 5:30 in this here segment we call Never Read the Comments. And to start, Anthony, a little moose-boosh as we always do. A Fish on Second, which is one, a great screen name. A Fish on Second. And two, someone who left a very correct comment on all fronts. Coming off last week's game, we're talking about all the ways in which Thursday night football was less than ideal for Washington. Said, I believe that the NFL should stop the Thursday night football for the players and the fans' sake. It won't happen because of the money. This is correct. This is 100% correct. Does anybody actually want Thursday night football? Like, clearly we watch it because it's the NFL, and especially if it's our team or the team that we cover or whatever. If it's a good game, we'll watch it. But part of the beauty of the NFL is the scarcity to me. I actually would prefer it to be on just Monday or Sunday, maybe Monday night. I can live with 2 days a week of NFL football. But I think the NFL, in a way, has diluted its own product. The problem is, in diluting its own product, both the on-field product, because Thursday night football is not actually real NFL football because of the lack of game planning, the lack of recovery. There's obviously elevated risk of all kinds of things because of all those things. Like, while it has diluted the product, it is anti-diluted. It has filled the bank accounts of all of the stakeholders, and thus they don't care. Because ultimately it's a business as much as we want it to be about the purity of the game. And so that sucks. I just want to acknowledge that this is a correct comment, even though by no means do I think that the NFL will ever go backwards. In fact, there will probably at some point be more football on other days of the week. Like, who knows what they're going to do now that they're doing the Christmas thing on a Wednesday. Like, what happens when Christmas is on Tuesday? Are they just going to have an NFL football game on a Tuesday? Like, it feels ridiculous.
I mean, we have.
Well, that was because of COVID and like a game got delayed versus like, I'm like, are they going to do something stupid? Like, I guess you could have a team play like Thursday, Tuesday.
That would be insane.
I don't know. Like,
I mean, actually not. Well, yes, it would be.
Yeah. Like, or if it's a Tuesday game, are you going to go, hey, those teams are going to, it's almost like a Monday where it's like, it's the prior week, not the next week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They're going to figure it out because Netflix money is the best money you can get in media right now. So they'll figure it out. All right. The main topic this week, and never read the comments, is about the Commanders offense coming off of the Philly game and the Take Command episode that we did where we asked, is the Cliff Kingsbury regression happening? That was the title of the video. Very, very, very catchy. Very, I want to say clickbaity because it's a question that people were asking, but we got into it. And the first comment that I got in this video, Anthony, happened so fast that I posted the video and then I saw a comment before I even saw a view.
Huh?
So zero views, one comment.
Okay.
And it came from GoCaps DMV and it said, I don't think so, but God, I hope not. To which I responded, you could watch the video. And thankfully, GoCaps DMV took that well and was like, you know, that's a great idea, Craig. Thanks for all the content. But I do find it hilarious, Anthony, that some people see this, you know, whether it's like a Twitter poll or an Instagram poll or whatever. I'm like, it's YouTube. The point is the video, not just the headline. That one made me chuckle.
Yeah, I mean, We live in a society, though, where one headline, you know, will tell the entire story. So, I don't know, man. Or they don't think it does, anyway.
But when there's a question, perhaps, you know, the what that headline is leading you to could have the answer.
It could. It could.
All right. So, with that, more substantive, people who actually watch the video. LMFF620 says, Cliff is a knowledgeable offensive football coach who has a history of at least momentary success with teams that are not first rate. So if he has this expertise, he ought to be able to take a look at his own tendencies by midseason, if indeed his offense is being stymied after early success, and make the necessary corrections. It's not rocket science, and it doesn't make sense to me that he would have this fatal flaw. Maybe for one game or a part of one game, but not leading to total end of season collapses. Bottom line, I don't blame Cliff. By the way, they lost by 1 point to Pittsburgh, now recognized as a top team, and by a touchdown to Philly, also a top team in the NFL. This is way ahead of the Commanders' expectations. I agree with most of this, but there's also just been so many collapses from Cliff. But I think when you look at it, some of those collapses are a bit overstated because they've had injuries and things. Like, oh, they were rolling and then Kyler Murray got hurt and then they stopped rolling. Well, yeah, Kyler Murray got hurt or another key contributor got hurt or whatever. And so sometimes there have definitely been regressions late in season for Cliff, due to the fact that some defenses have gotten on to his tendencies for that season and kind of jumped on them. But there's also been other seasons where maybe other non-schematic factors have gotten in the way. And I think the other part of it that I'm really interested to see this season is Cliff has talked about how the head coaching responsibilities really got in the way of him being the offensive coach that he wanted to be. Without that as an issue, can he make whatever changes need to happen? Because NFL teams are going to get banged up. It is a long season. How do you, I don't want to say proof yourself of that, because every team is going to struggle with worse players. That's the nature of it. If your backups were better than your starters, they wouldn't be your backups. But some teams are more resistant to it than others. And I think that's the thing that you have to acknowledge and say Cliff has not always maximized perhaps what he's had. Along the same lines, IA Rocks 44. People are seriously overreacting. Winning either one of the Pennsylvania games, Philly or Pittsburgh, would have been huge. We are playing with house money. Very few teams have the speed and discipline on D to beat this team like those two. And yes, the other teams have clearly better talent. People need to lay off Cliff. The Eagles' defensive talent and our own execution was the problem. Insert players, aka not Cliff. Jaden had his worst game throwing the ball, and the wide receivers dropped very key balls. But to be honest, the Philly D-line was totally handling our O-line, not to mention Thursday games on the road, even if it's only 2 hours away, are insane. If they let Dallas handle them this way, we can start getting concerned. I think this is the right approach. That is where I am on kind of the Cliff of it all. And frankly, the Jaden of it all. I think that this is a an offense that ran into some really good defenses, an offense that has really dominated a lot of lower opponents. And part of that is going to happen when you're dealing with the level of talent that's on this team. It's like your scheme can elevate beyond other teams that have similar talent and worse scheming and worse attention to detail and worse, you know, that are not as well taught, etc. But like, Noah Brown's a good NFL football player, but he's not a star number two receiver. Like, Cincinnati's got T. Higgins as their two. Washington has Noah Brown. Devontae Smith in Philly. Like, we're talking about different levels. You know, when Tampa was rolling earlier this year, like, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. Like, Terry's awesome, and Noah Brown's been good, and he plays his face off, but he's still a guy who was cut by the Houston Texans earlier in the season. And that's it. Like the Texans, when they've got Nico and Diggs and Tank Dell and all those dudes, like, yeah, they've got a good receiving core. A lot of it's hurt or has been hurt. But there's a reason Noah Brown was on the outs there. But like, okay, he fit and is a starter. He was playing a lot of snaps here. And so I think there's just the reality that against the best teams, it's just going to be way harder. Washington has been a little banged up on the offensive line, specifically inside where Biotis has been battling, Allegretti, Cosme, like they've all got stuff. And that's stuff that isn't keeping them out of games compared to Coleman, who's got a shoulder that has kept him out of games. Lucas, who hasn't played in a bunch of weeks, and Wiley, who got back for that Thursday game, but had missed time. Those guys are not able to execute at the level that they were earlier in the season against better talent. And still they were competitive. So you can put that optimistic spin on it. You can say that's all really good. They've ultimately got to get it done. But if all of a sudden Zimmer on a short week coming off the mini bye for the Commanders is all over everything Cliff is doing and this offense just looks out of sync and out of sorts, well, then perhaps we need to have a different conversation. But to this point, I think it has much more to do with the opponent for all the reasons stated in that comment. Along those lines as well, greatest kids 50-47. Along the offensive side, we're pretty banged up. With this mini bye and the late bye is good for us from a health standpoint, getting close to the playoffs. I think when we play Philly the second time, it won't be the same feeling. Philly has also has the Ravens and Steelers remaining on the schedule. So worth pointing that out because the division is still probably up for grabs, depending on what happens in those games. But also, even if Washington gets a wild card, like, that's fine. You know, that I think that would, anyone would have taken that at the beginning of the season. That was either reasonable, rational, or both. But I think when you talk about playing Philly again, I mean, Washington had the lead into the fourth quarter. You can say they had the fourth quarter because Jake Elliott is on a whatever the opposite of a heater is right now, the Eagles kicker. But they still force some longer field goals and boat up in the red zone. And, you know, that still, even if you hit those field goals and the extra point is what, 7 points? So you're still talking about a one score game into the fourth quarter for Washington, just if those kicks go in and nothing else happened. So that's good. That's encouraging. You'd have to think that facing them the second time, the offense would have a little bit more sustainability to it. They can get some more first downs, sustain some drives. They would have a full week to prepare compared to the short week and being banged up and all that kind of stuff. So I think when they play again, it's going to be a really good game. I would expect it to be a tough game. We'll see what the crowd is like. I think that's another interesting thing. That game was Thursday night, you know, Philadelphia, tough off-road environment. What happens in D.C.? Philly fans, we know, make the trip down. That stadium has often been at its worst, if you will, when Philly comes to town because of the proximity and how good the Eagles have been the past bunch of years, where Eagles fans have had reasons late in the season to travel, especially late in the season. I mean, I knew the moment that Bruce Allen was getting fired was week whatever that was in 2019. I remember going up to visiting I left the press box because the game was a blowout and went and visited a friend who was sitting on the suite level. And I could see a lot more of the stadium from a crowd standpoint because I was higher up than I typically can from the press box. And seeing the black and green in that stadium and the 70-80%, it was the most full the stadium had been all year too, by the way. And it was full of Eagles fans. And I was like, Snyder is not, like, Dan Snyder's a moron, but he's not going to stand for this. And sure enough, you know, Bruce Allen's gone. Jay had already been fired that year. You knew that they were going to do something a little bit different. And we all know how that ultimately went down because of all the things that Dan had done prior to that point. But for this season, I expect it to be a lot more split. And then starting next season, I would expect a lot less Philly fans in the building because obviously more Commanders fans are going to commit earlier. They already sold more season tickets, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Success lead to a more home partisan crowd compared to Eagles fans who bought their tickets in May as soon as the schedule came out, anticipating that they were going to have an easy game and week whatever here in D.C. because the Commanders were going to stink and the Eagles were going to be good. Well, turns out both teams are really good, and that game is going to be for the division to either lock it up for Philly or leave it as a possibility going into the final weeks of the regular season for Washington, depending on what happens in the Steelers game and Ravens game for the Eagles, which have not happened yet. Last couple of comments here in Never Read the Comments actually come from Eagles fans. And I mentioned that we had these earlier in the show. But CTeal2018 says, Eagles fans here. Actually, sorry, I got one more that I want to get to first before we get to that. Or is that one farther down? Or did I delete that? No, it's down here. So before we get to the Eagles fans saying nice things, one more Commanders Eagles thing that I wanted to get to from LJNX8WE. If there's a better way to say that, if that's code for something, LJ, I don't apologize. DeJean at 40 was a steal. Well, Peters Bubba didn't like, especially in the division. Good trades are the best for team when they whatever the other team had in mind doesn't work out. And you know, if you can steal someone for a total flop, then great. Sick. The Jahan Dotson trade looks like that for Washington, where Dotson has gone to Philadelphia. He's done absolutely nothing. And Washington turned that into multiple players and picks. And it's like, sweet. Done. Excellent. That extra third rounder they got kind of unlocks them to make the Lattimore trade. We'll see who they get. You know, Miami not nearly as good as anticipated, so that pick is going to wind up being higher. Like, there's a lot of good things that happened out of that trade where it's like, yeah, that's the best trade for Washington, especially against a division opponent where they suffer. But the reality is, most trades, there's a reason both sides want to make them. And sometimes it's a salary dump and it might work out in the long term to help a franchise rebuild, a la what the Saints are kind of doing with the Lattimore trade. They just needed to get salary off their books. Washington gets a good player. It works out. Some trades wind up working out for neither team. Like the Dwight Howard trade back in the day kind of wound up working out for absolutely no one. In the NBA, you see that, I think, more in the NBA, but we're just more trades. But often trades work out for both teams, and you can't get caught up in looking at the other team. You can't get caught up in what Howie Roseman did with that pick. The Commanders needed multiple players. One Cooper DeJean was not going to help them. A Cooper DeJean, a Ben Sinnott, Mikey Sainer still, Ben Sinnott, on down the list, all the guys they got out of that trade. That is what the Commanders needed, because they needed volume of players. And yes, DeJean looks like a stud. He looks, and him at 40 is a steal. But it's really a steal more of reflective of all the teams that passed on him early. But what Washington's going to get out of this is one of their starting corners and captains for the next decade, a tight end who I think is capable of a lot more than he's been in position to do right now, and will be in more productive roles moving forward when they move off from Zach Ertz, et cetera. And a couple of other guys in that deal and how it all goes down that will be players for them. So you can't worry too much about being in the division. You can't worry about too much about teams that aren't necessarily on your timeline. You can't worry about anything other than doing what's best for your team. Because if the other team is good and you stink, well, they're still good and you still stink. But if the other team's good and you're also good, well, now you get to go compete. And that's where the Washington is. And that brings us to the final set of comments from Eagles fans that I thought were interesting. First, PJM7879 says, Eagles fan, your comments, talking about Logan and I had to say after the game, are excellent. Talent disparity, yes. Only way to overcome disparity is precise execution of details. On fourth down, coach knew his defense was failing, and a first down gives more rest. Almost impossible for a defense to stop an offense three times with 1 yard to go. Needed the points to have any chance to win. And talking about the fourth down decision that Quinn made, like, yeah, the Eagles executed better, not just on fourth down where Commanders bobbled a snap, but they executed better on second and one, third and two before that. That's where the Commanders screwed up that drive. And so the continued higher level of execution, in part because of the talent disparity, I think was the huge key to that game. And that's sports. Better players often win. And I thought this one was really interesting in terms of perspective and how Eagles fans are thinking about this Washington team right now. But C. Teal 2018 says, Eagles fan here, you guys, meaning the Commanders, are the team in the division that are on the come up. And I feel that the new brain trust is competent enough long term that you guys will have success. So Eagles fans are looking around, not necessarily scared, but with a level of respect going, oh, yeah, they got it figured out in D.C. The days of this being a three-team rotational division where the Giants have a run and they pop in and out. The Eagles have a run and they pop in and out. The Cowboys, and then Washington's just the trampoline at the bottom that everyone else is bouncing off of. And then it seems like 5 years, they pop up, win a division, and go right back to the bottom again. Those days are over. It's what it looks like through 11 weeks here, 12 weeks here, where Washington has a much more sustained ability to succeed in the long term. And so we'll see how it goes. Next division game, of course, this week is Dallas. And it is a huge, huge test to see if Washington can get back on track and get going and prove that they are the team that we thought they were earlier in the season. And there hasn't been a regression as we head towards December. That is Never Read the Comments. You can check us out, of course, Thursdays. You never read the comments, but if you miss any part of the show and you want to maybe have your comment read on the radio, you can go to YouTube at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. Subscribe so you don't miss the best of the Hoffman Show daily. Normally, we stream live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. Not today or tomorrow because of technical reasons, as I'm on remote. But I'll be back in studio and back on the YouTube live stream on Monday. When we get back here on the Team 980, it is time for our pick six. You'll hear from Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. over the next half hour here on the Hoffman Show.